Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Monday, April 6th, 2020. This is Section A. The front page headline reads, "Urged by Saudis, White House weighs export cap," by James Osborne, Houston Chronicle. Almost a month after Saudi Arabia shocked the global oil industry in announcing that it was raising production after failing to reach a deal with Russia, the Trump administration is grappling with whether to break with decades of U.S. policy advocating for free markets over government control of industry. With analysts projecting up to a 35 million barrel per day drop in global oil demand this month, unlike anything seen in modern times, Saudi Arabia is now reportedly urging the Trump administration to join with the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries in limiting the amount of U.S. crude flowing into global markets. The request has set off a debate around Washington and the American oil sector, after Bloomberg News reported Friday that the White House is considering tariffs on foreign oil to protect oil and gas drillers, as well as putting a cap on exports, despite objections from free market advocates within the administration. President Donald Trump is championing a cut by OPEC, tweeting Thursday that he expects Russian President Vladimir Putin and Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman to announce a deal to reduce oil production by 10 million to 15 million barrels per day. But it's unclear whether Trump is willing to take steps to reduce U.S. production. It is such an unfamiliar place for the U.S. to be. We haven't seen the U.S. cutting production since the early 1970s, said Jim Crane, a senior fellow at Rice University's Baker Institute for Public Policy. It's part of this whole transformation from not only being the largest oil consumer in the world to the largest producer, and it's creating this whole policy schizophrenia. No one seems to know what to do. The dilemma has sprung from a catastrophic plunge in oil prices, from highs in January of about $63 a barrel to a recent low near $20, a price level at which few, if any, U.S. companies can make money. Debt-laden companies are facing potential bankruptcies, and layoffs are rolling through the industry. Oil rallied Friday on the prospects of OPEC and Russian production cuts, jumping 12% to settle at $28.34 a barrel. The move to limit U.S. exports is not without precedent. Up until 2015, the United States maintained an outright ban on crude oil exports. But it faces fierce opposition from many Republicans in Washington and larger oil companies and refiners. Trump met Friday with CEOs of several oil and refining companies, including ExxonMobil and Chevron, and the Houston companies Occidental Petroleum and Phillips 66. In a letter to Trump earlier last week, American Petroleum Institute President Mike Summers and American Fuel and Petrochemical Manufacturers President Chet Thompson said any move to control U.S. production, quote, would exacerbate this already difficult situation, jeopardize the short and long-term competitiveness of our refining sector worldwide, and could jeopardize the benefits Americans experience as a result of our increasing energy dominance, unquote. Likewise, Senator Lisa Murkowski, Republican from Alaska, chairwoman of the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee, along with five other senators, wrote a letter to Secretary of State Mike Pompeo urging him to consider alternative measures, including cutting off U.S. aid or imposing sanctions to get Saudi Arabia to cut production. There's concern the U.S. shouldn't graduate into that territory where government controls the industry, said Sarah Ladislaw, a senior vice president at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, a Washington think tank. And when does that go away, or does that become a permanent feature of the U.S. oil industry? Saudi Arabia, Russia, and the rest of the expanded cartel known as OPEC Plus are scheduled to meet in Vienna on Monday to discuss output cuts. The motivation for Saudi Arabia to strike a deal to cut production is acute. The kingdom relies on oil revenues to maintain one of the highest standards of living in the Middle East. After announcing its production increase last month, the Saudi government ordered agencies to begin cutting their budgets 20%, Reuters reported. But while Saudi leaders are eager for a deal to end the stalemate and bring prices back up, they are not willing to do so without reciprocation from the United States and other oil producers, Crane said. Saudi and Russia, they're not going to be the chumps and do all the sacrificing so shale drillers can steal their market share, he said. If we want Saudi to act, we're going to have to make a sacrifice and take some oil off the market. A cut of 10 to 15 million barrels a day is unlikely to return oil markets to $60 a barrel, but it could be a lifeline for smaller producers who tend not to have the money to withstand an extended price shock as their larger competitors. I think it would help us, said Cactus Schroeder, the owner of Chisholm Exploration in Abilene. There's going to be nobody left in the oil patch if they don't do something really quickly. Already in Texas, there is a movement for the Texas Railroad Commission to begin regulating oil production again, spearheaded by Commissioner Ryan Sitton. The other two commissioners, Wayne Christian and Christy Craddock, oppose such a move. But after Texas oil companies Pioneer Natural Resources and Parsley Energy asked the commission to consider whether the state's oil production exceeded market demand, a meeting to debate the matter has been set for April 14th. This article is entitled, Texas Lawmaker Leads Effort to Get Industry Prioritized. Arrington of 19th Congressional District, 41 others send letter to Trump. By Mella McEwen. Representative Jody Arrington, Republican Texas, and 41 fellow Republican congressmen, including Whip Steve Scalise, have written the Trump administration asking that the nation's energy industry be prioritized during the coronavirus crisis. The president has his hands full managing the corona crisis and preventing damage not only to citizens and their health, but to damage to the economy long term, Arrington said in a telephone interview. It's critical he engage, and the circumstances dictated that he engage, he said. Russia is no surprise that there's such aggressive and even hostile behavior towards the U.S., but for Saudi Arabia to knowingly damage the shale producers and markets in the U.S., our country has provided such strong support. I'm talking about the Middle East. When an ally participates in market manipulation and distortion of prices, that's more disconcerting. We greatly appreciate the hard work and effort Congressman Arrington provided in his letter to President Trump, Ben Shepard, president of the Permian Basin Petroleum Association, said in an email to the reporter Telegram. Additionally, his ability to garner the support of over 40 additional members of Congress from all over the country demonstrates the importance of our domestic oil and gas industry. Arrington, who represents the 19th Congressional District that includes Abilene and Lubbock, stressed that the energy industry does not want market intervention policies by this or any other administration. The energy industry is notoriously free market oriented. Producers believe in fair and open trade and open markets. But as mentioned in the letter to the president, he said there are things that can be done to reduce unnecessary burdens on producers and the costs associated with those regulatory burdens to give the industry breathing room and further stability. He called for regulatory relief, such as rewriting the Obama-era methane regulations under Quad O regulations. He also urged that smaller independent producers be considered, especially as the administration looks to purchase oil to fill the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. The bigger guys can absorb blows, whether it's a price war or a pandemic, better than the smaller operators, Arrington said. The administration needs to be strategic in buying oil for the SPR. Arrington cited the recently passed Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, designed to help individuals and businesses impacted by the pandemic. That act provides hundreds of billions of dollars in bridge loans so small businesses of all kinds can get cash flow and keep their payrolls, he said. Because of the national security implications of oil and gas, I would prioritize energy companies in getting those short-term loans. That's why we said we need to make sure to look at all the bank regulations around lending to the energy industry and look at ways to relax those regulations and add flexibility to provide cash flow and stabilize the industry. Oil and gas companies are not suffering because they made bad business decisions, he said, but from events out of their control and through no fault of their own. This is not a bailout. These are bridge loans to help job creators get off their knees and back in the game. Note, Congressman Mike Conaway is working on parallel efforts to engage House leadership, the administration, and the oil and gas industry directly on this issue, in addition to increasing diplomatic pressure on the Saudis, according to his office. This article is entitled, Local Pilots Deliver Supplies to Rural Hospitals. Items include face shields and splitters for ventilators, by J.C. Lewis. A Facebook page called West Texas Aviators has helped organize pilots to fly parts and supplies to rural hospitals around West Texas. Odessan Mark Merritt, owner of West Tech Seal Inc. and Maribia Craft Chocolate, has put out a call for pilots on the Facebook page to quickly move supplies, including face shields and splitters used for ventilators, around West Texas during the coronavirus pandemic. We have probably 70-something pilots and planes ready to go, Merritt said. They're interested in wanting to fly parts wherever. The first parts we did, we took parts from Odessa to Lubbock last week, and then when some other parts were finished, another pilot flew those parts from Lubbock to Pecos and Monahans. Merritt flew Friday from Odessa to Dallas to pick up face shields and bring those back, he said. Once the supplies are in Odessa, they will fly the face shields to other rural hospitals. We ship products anyway because we're a manufacturer, and typically when you're moving, you just put it on UPS or FedEx or freight. And well, that's 2 to 3 days typically, he said. This is not something we want to wait 2 to 3 days for. We all feel a sense of urgency that we need to get the product done now. He said as soon as face shields and splitters for ventilators are off the 3D printers here, they can have the supplies in Lubbock in less than an hour. Merritt, who has been a pilot since the 1980s, flies a 1975 Grumman Tiger AA-5B. He sometimes borrows a friend's Cessna 210. Merritt said people have been excited to get the parts they need faster. The pilots were also excited to be able to help. We have pilots that have jumped on the idea, he said. There are pilots all the way from just east of Dallas down to Houston, Grady, San Angelo, Abilene, and Amarillo. Pilots from all over Texas jumped in and said, just let us know. Merritt said that when a mission comes up, they post it on the Facebook page and somebody will take it. He said it has been hectic during this time because his company hasn't stopped making its products. He said they are doing double duty with a lot of things right now because products for his company need to be produced and delivered to customers. We make specialized mechanical seals for rotating equipment, Merritt said. That's used in pharmaceutical, food processing, power plants, and crude oil pipelines. So we cover a lot of the industries that really need our product as well. Merritt said this has been an overwhelming experience because there are things that have to fall into place to make sure the pilots aren't doing more harm than good. There's a lot of pieces to the puzzle that are happening all over Texas, he said. Probably 30 people in Midland and Odessa are working on the project with us right now, plus now out of Texas Tech. There's somewhere north of 200 emails a day that just come across on different questions, problems, things that we need to solve to try to keep this thing moving. They have made 4 deliveries, including the one made on Friday. He said sometimes it doesn't always have to move by air, but when it does, they make sure that happens. Don Eck, Executive Director of the Museum of the Southwest, is taking donations to help keep all of this running in Midland and Odessa, Merritt said. Ward Memorial Hospital was among the first hospitals to get a delivery. The facility in Monahans had only one ventilator, Merritt said. The hospital received 3D printed splitters for the ventilator to be able to serve more patients. Monahans is the first example that we helped out earlier last week, but they had one ventilator, and we were able to work with them, make a few parts, and get their capacity up to being able to put 12 people on ventilators, she said. University of Texas Permian Basin Dean of Engineering George Nana said all of this started when they were looking at ways to make ventilator valves to support more patients on one ventilator. Then we started raising questions as to whether the other needs from the local hospitals, especially in rural communities like Pecos, he said. This has been a collaborative effort between Texas Tech University, UTPB, Odessa College, Midland College, local businesses such as Merritt's, and nonprofits such as Museum of the Southwest, Nana said. These organizations have been using their 3D printers to make splitters for ventilators and face shields. Nana said they have enough supplies to make 330 face shields, and they have delivered 30 face shields so far to Monahans, Pecos, and Lubbock. They are also working on other requests. Midland Memorial has requested 400 face shields, MCH has requested 100 face shields, and a few other clinics have made requests, he said. He said this is a good opportunity and shows how a university can help during a crisis. For UT Permian Basin to be involved, I think this is a way of demonstrating that we're taking care of our home, he said. If we were located 300 miles away from the Permian Basin, the response time would not be as quick as the way we have responded. The initiative has been pushing supplies out to the rural communities. He said it brought tears to his eyes when Don Hillman, a physician assistant at Ward Memorial Hospital, said they had only one ventilator. We realize that he's not alone in this, that other communities may be in that same situation, he said. You don't want to put the health practitioners in that kind of decision-making on who gets the ventilator. This has also allowed students to gain experience. I've recruited one of the students, Dean Lizotte, Nana said. He's currently engaged in the 3D printing process. He's not in this because we are paying him, but he is in it because of the impact it will have on the community. This couldn't be a better opportunity for students to showcase how you can transfer the engineering experience to give it back. This article is entitled Midland, Ector County's Finish Weekend at 26 Cases, from Staff Reports. Confirmed cases in both Midland and Ector County have both started the third week of the pandemic in the Permian Basin with 26 coronavirus cases each. After another 4 confirmed coronavirus cases reported by its health department this weekend, Ector County led the Permian Basin with 26. But late Sunday night, the City of Midland Health Department reported 2 of its own. The Ector County Health Department reported a combined 11 cases on Friday and Saturday, while the Health Department in Midland reported another 7 Friday through Sunday. Both counties trail other larger metropolitan areas in West Texas, including Lubbock County, which leads the region with 151 confirmed cases through 8 p.m. Friday, according to the Texas Department of State Health Services. El Paso County was the other county in the region with more than 106. The two counties that split Amarillo, Potter and Randall, have combined for 74, while Taylor County, Abilene, was just ahead of Ector with 27. The City of Midland Health Department reported numbers 25 and 26 were both 20-something females. Both are self-isolating at home. The source of exposure for one was contact with a known case, while the other is undetermined. The Ector County Health Department showed the newest confirmed cases are 3 females and 1 male. Exposure for 3 females from community spread, and one was travel-related. The Ector County Health Department also shows 197 people have been tested, 112 were negative cases, and 50 results are pending. Both Ector and Midland counties are showing close to even splits when it comes to gender. 12 men and 14 women in Midland, 14 men and 12 women in Odessa. In Midland County, the most impacted age range is 20 to 29, 11 cases, while in Ector County, the most confirmed cases in any age range is between 50 and 59. While Midland County's cases were nearly split evenly between the first week, 11 from March 22nd to 28th, and second, 15 from March 29th through April 4th, all but one or 25 cases were reported this week in Ector County. Cases in West Texas through 8 p.m. Saturday. Lubbock County, 151. El Paso County, 106. Potter County, 40. Randall County, 34. Taylor County, 27. Ector County, 26. Midland County, 26. Tom Green County, 20. Andrews County, 6. Dawson County, 3. Crane County, 2. Martin County, 1. Gaines County, 1. This article is entitled Railroad Commission to Discuss Market Demand Request by Mella McEwen. The Railroad Commissioners are scheduled to hold a virtual meeting to consider the request by Parsley Energy and Pioneer Natural Resources that the agency determine reasonable market demand for Texas crude. The meeting is set for 9:30 a.m., April 14th. Railroad Commissioner Ryan Sitton said he expects a variety of shareholders, from the industry to economists to statisticians, to participate. During his recent YouTube video discussing what has been happening with the oil and gas industry, he said that he hasn't formed an opinion yet on whether the agency should require Texas producers to shut in production. Stability is the focus of the April 14th meeting, he said. He chided criticism from those who say enacting pro-rationing for the first time since the 1970s was government manipulation. I find prejudging a conversation that hasn't been had yet to be arrogant, he said. The crux of the issue is stability for the energy industry, Sitton said. Producers can independently shut in their own production, but it would be more beneficial to have the commission oversee shutting in wells in a more orderly way. We applaud the commission's efforts to hold a market demand hearing later this month, Ben Shepard, president of the Permian Basin Petroleum Association, told the Reporter Telegram by email. These are extraordinary times, and I appreciate the commission's effort to gather as much data as possible. Some in the industry strongly favor the commission implementing their proration statutes. Others feel the dramatic drop in oil and gas demand and the corresponding voluntary shutting in of wells and reduction in drilling will have the desired effect of limiting production. Drilling rigs have been idled at a rapid clip since prices began collapsing, but Sitton said that it will take production off the market 30, 60, or 90 days from now, just as demand is ramping up. One thing they miss in a downturn like this, even at 120 days of shelter in place, 2 years from now the world will want even more reliable, affordable energy as they come out of the COVID-19 recession, he said. The April 14th meeting will look at whether pro-rationing production is a good idea, how it can best be done, and how that can be used to drive international agreements. He acknowledged that by itself, Texas cutting production would have little impact on the global oil market. It gives us the opportunity to drive the conversation in a leadership position with Saudi Arabia, with OPEC, with Russia. That's important, Sitton said. If, after the meeting, it's agreed that pro-rationing the state's production is a good idea and a method is devised, Sitton said action could be taken quickly, as soon as April 21st. This article is entitled Dead Cow Oil Play Set to Be Next Permian, Now in Doubt, by Jonathan Gilbert, Bloomberg. Just a bit more than 3 weeks ago, the head of Argentina's state-run driller outlined an aggressive $1.8 billion spending plan for 2020 in the county's Vaca Muerta shale region, based on $60 a barrel crude. With global prices starting the year above $68, it wasn't unrealistic. Now, all bets are off. The toxic mashup of an oil price war between Saudi Arabia and Russia, two of the world's largest producers, and the COVID-19 pandemic have driven global crude to below $25 a barrel. That's created a new reality for Argentina's plans to develop a formation known as the Vaca Muerta, or dead cow in English. The region often is compared to the Permian Basin, with a promise to push out 1 million barrels of oil a day and turn around an economy on course for a third straight contraction this year. They were in a place where they were drawing significant interest in the region because it was one of the better resources globally. But that's falling apart, according to Fernando Valle, an analyst with Bloomberg Intelligence. At today's prices, even state-run YPF SA's three flagship shale projects, where costs are lowest, with break-evens in U.S. dollars in the mid to high 30s, would lose money. Meanwhile, the company's New York traded shares are down by almost 60% since oil began its plunge in February, and Bank of America Securities is predicting they can fall a lot more. YPF declined to comment. For years, exploration companies have been excited about Vaca Muerta in Patagonia, with the quality of its so-called mother rock rivaling shale areas in the U.S. The companies, including global oil majors Chevron and Royal Dutch Shell, have begun drilling in the region, though mostly as an initial step designed to get a better handle on how to bring the oil to market, even as significant logistical and economic hurdles remain. But the bottom line has suddenly changed. Any plans for test drilling, early phase production, and infrastructure investments are going to be postponed, said Ignacio Runi, an upstream oil analyst in Buenos Aires, for consultancy Wood Mackenzie. The only chance for progress, he said, would come if Brent can stabilize above $30 a barrel, meaning investments in Vaca Muerta's most developed fields would continue to make sense. The price crash puts all Argentine oil production in doubt, YPF chairman Guillermo Nielsen told the Telam news agency during a recent event in Salta province. There's another factor for consideration as well. Coronavirus and the price rout have arrived at a time when drillers were already pulling back in the Vaca Muerta, after the government put in place price controls to tame high inflation. The number of rigs operating in Argentina slumped to fewer than 50 in February, compared with more than 70 before the controls went into effect 7 months ago, according to Baker Hughes. At the same time, oil majors worldwide are racing to cut spending in response to the dual global challenges. Still, those who'd started committing to Vaca Muerta, Shell, ExxonMobil Corporation, and ConocoPhillips, were putting up with price meddling because of Argentina's long-term shale potential and because new president Alberto Fernandez was promising to safeguard their investments with special legislation. Meanwhile, in a bid to save drilling, oil-producing provinces and powerful trade unions have been lobbying the federal government for a domestic crude price of about $50 a barrel, likely funded by fuel consumers at the pump. Such a move would mirror a similar strategy by previous President Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner, but a problem, albeit perhaps a temporary one, has emerged with that idea. A nationwide lockdown in Argentina to stop the spread of coronavirus has dramatically suppressed demand for fuel. That means drillers wouldn't benefit from high local crude prices anyway because they'll need global buyers for their production glut. With the likes of Shell and Exxon analyzing the new price scenario, how things play out in the near future in Vaca Muerta will surely impact chances in the long term of oil flowing freely from the region. Vaca Muerta is the primary calling card for investment in Argentina, Bloomberg's Intelligence Valley wrote in a March 20th report, and its development is critical to the country's recovery. This article is entitled Oil Sector Facing Unprecedented Crisis, by James Osborne, Sergio Chapa, and Aaron Douglas from the Houston Chronicle. The coronavirus pandemic has caused an unprecedented decline in oil demand, setting off a chain reaction that is threatening to bring much of the world's oil sector to collapse. As stay-at-home orders go out around the globe in a bid to slow the spread of the virus, gasoline stations are left with few, if any, customers. Jet planes sit idle on runways, and truckers watch their routes cut. In response, refineries, like those that line the Texas Gulf Coast, are slashing their output, which means the crude oil they would have turned into fuel is going into storage tanks. Only at the current rate of production, those tanks could be full by the end of April, prompting some pipeline companies to begin asking oil and gas producers in West Texas, the center of the U.S. oil boom, to cut production because they are running out of places to send the crude. That left Abilene oil man Cactus Schroeder, the owner of Chisholm Exploration, little choice but to call off his drilling projects and start contemplating when he might shut down those wells already in production. "I was getting ready to drill a well southwest of Abilene, and I called my partners and said, 'No way,' after we heard oil was going into the single digits in May," he said. "Somewhere between 50 and 60 people were going to be working on that well, and that's just one well. And when everyone else shuts down, they don't have anyone else to go to work for. They're on their hands." Oil prices jumped 12% in New York to $28.34 a barrel Friday on the hope that President Donald Trump's overtures to Saudi Arabia and Russia would end the price war, flooding the market with crude and lead to production cuts of 10 to 15 million barrels a day. On Saturday, however, a meeting planned for Monday between OPEC, Russia, and other producers was delayed after tensions between Saudi Arabia and Russia flared anew. Oil prices, which recently plunged as low as $20 a barrel, have fallen nearly 40% since the beginning of March and more than 50% since the beginning of the year. The ramifications for Houston, considered the oil capital of the world, and the wider Texas economy are profound. More than 200,000 people across Texas are employed in the oil sector itself, not to mention the nearly 1 million workers in the state's manufacturing sector, much of which is devoted to making parts and equipment for the oil and gas industry. Over the month of April, analysts are projecting global oil demand will drop from 20 to 30 million barrels per day, a 30% decline that is unlike almost anything in the history of the oil industry. For context, during the 2008 financial crisis, when the world's financial institutions came close to collapsing, oil demand declined 2%. Daniel Juergen, the oil historian whose annual CERAWeek by IHS Market Conference in Houston draws CEOs, sheiks, and oil tycoons from around the globe, said the only comparable period was in the early 1930s, when the discovery of massive oil fields in East Texas, combined with the Great Depression, caused a collapse in prices that has never been repeated until now. When storage tanks hit capacity, analysts say, oil prices in many markets could go negative, a terrifying scenario for oil companies that is already beginning. Last week, an obscure grade of crude produced in Wyoming was selling for negative 19 cents a barrel, meaning producers had to pay someone to take their oil. In the Permian Basin, some grades of oil were trading below $6 a barrel. "There has never been anything like this. Basically, most of the world is standing still," Juergen said. "And when the world stands still, it uses a lot less oil." Only weeks into the crisis, many within the oil industry have started cutting staff, with oil field services giant Halliburton furloughing 3,500 workers, pipe maker Tenaris laying off 900 workers across the country, and Apache Corporation laying off 85 workers in Midland. Mike Cahill of Houston was laid off last month from his job as a recruiter for Houston-based U.S. Well Services, along with 200 other workers. Now he's trying to file for unemployment benefits, but can't get through the state's website or phone lines, which are backed up with hundreds of thousands of Texans trying to do the same. "The bottom fell out," said Cahill. "It hit us all as a perfect storm." Triumph Fabrication in San Antonio, which makes equipment for oil wells and pipelines, is considering layoffs after the crash in oil prices lost the company an almost $800,000 deal with a local pipeline company, said Joseph Dorn, Triumph's president of sales. "The company has enough work to last it only through Wednesday. If no other contracts materialize, it might have to let go at least some of its 25 workers." "That would have gotten us down the road 3 months," he said. "The pipeline company said they were going to do it themselves. And this is just the beginning," economists say. The combination of coronavirus-related shutdowns and the oil price collapse is expected to result in the loss of at least 150,000 jobs, about 1 in 20 in the Houston area this year, said Patrick Jankowski, economist for the Greater Houston Partnership, an economic development group. "What we are seeing is energy prices are trading lower than they were and the lowest point of the energy during downturn of the 1980s, Jankowski said. "This is going to be somewhere between the Great Recession and the oil bust we had in the 80s. In Washington, Trump is scrambling to respond, meeting Friday with CEOs from oil companies, including ExxonMobil and Occidental Petroleum, a day after tweeting that he had spoken with Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman about repairing the breach with Russia that spurred the crash in global energy markets. The severe drop in oil prices even prompted Ryan Sitton, a member of the Texas Railroad Commission, to call on the commission to set limits on production in Texas, something the oil and gas regulator has not done since the 1970s. "Right now, as a globe, we have a common enemy, and it's COVID-19, Sitton said last weekend. "We've got to do things that we've never done before because we're facing a problem that we've never faced before." The great unknown, which is causing so much panic, is how long this downturn in demand will last. In typical times, a collapse in oil prices would result in a corresponding rise in demand, as businesses and consumers take advantage of lower energy prices to run more trucks and take that extra drive to the beach. In time, oil prices rise. But with much of the world stuck at home, that same rebound is unlikely to happen this time, said Pierce Hammond Jr., a senior research analyst at Simmons Energy, an investment bank in Houston. "As we get past the virus and people start moving around again, demand should come back up. But how quickly? How soon are people going to get back on planes?" he said. "The oil system has never had to deal with a stop like this before." For now, expectations are that oil demand will continue to decline until governments start to loosen social distancing measures. When that will come is anybody's guess, but the belief is it will happen in the next few months. For instance, Juergens said he was hopeful May's oil figures would not be as bad as April and predicted that by January 2021, U.S. oil demand would be down 3 million barrels per day year over year. But for now, the situation in U.S. oil fields is dire, with some oil companies in the Permian Basin not only struggling to find open pipelines, but also trucking companies able to take crude to refineries, said Larry Oldham, a Midland oil veteran who sold his firm Parallel Petroleum in 2009. "You can't move oil unless you truck it, and you can find a market for it. And now even some of the companies that are trucking are saying their storage is full," he said. "I've never seen anything like this, not in my career, and I've been in the business since 1975. With expectations that crude prices won't rebound for a while, companies face tough questions from investors in the months ahead. Lutz Killian, a senior economic policy advisor at the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas, said that as long as crude stays below $30 a barrel, most companies will be unable to attract capital to continue operating, eventually forcing many to declare bankruptcy. That should mean plenty of work for people like Drew McManigle, who advises energy companies during bankruptcy proceedings. McManigle got into the business after his father's own oil company in Odessa declared bankruptcy during the 1980s oil crash. And while he likes to talk about the oil industry being one of the optimists, he admits that this crisis could be the end for many of them. I can promise you that banks and private equity firms are looking at their balance sheets right now, he said. There will still be an energy industry, but it will look very different. There will only be the oil majors and a few well-capitalized and well-run independents. This is the obituary column. Monday, April 6, 2020. Joshua Carson Hicks. Joshua C. Hicks, 18, passed away suddenly on April 2, 2020. An honor student at Midland College, he will be greatly missed by his parents, three sisters, several aunts, uncles, and cousins. A graveside service will be held April 7, 2020 at 1 p.m. at Rest Haven Memorial Park.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, April 6th. Navy recruiter helps local hospitals. This story was written by Royal McGregor. When Elias Gray first fired up his 3D printer, he didn't foresee the immediate impact he would have in the Odessa Midland area to help combat the coronavirus pandemic. The 26-year-old Navy recruiter started printing face shields about a week ago with one 3D printer, and now he has the backing of 30 printers, which can help feed the needs of Odessa Regional Medical Center, Medical Center Hospital, and Midland Memorial Hospital. Gray started a GoFundMe account on March 27th with an initial goal of $3,000, which he said was reached in 3 days. Gray has received additional monetary donations, supplies to make the face shields, and people willing to help assemble them. The operation that Gray started grew larger when Texas Tech, Odessa College, and Midland College got involved. Quote, "It restored my faith in humanity that so many people wanted to help," Gray said about his one-man project evolving into a much longer venture. Quote, "I really don't want to be the face. I would like this to be that West Texans came together and pushed all of these face shields out to places that needed them." End quote. When Gray began printing face shields, he was printing them at his house. The operation quickly grew larger with the assistance of Gray's place of worship, Odessa Bible Church, which is letting him use their cafeteria space. Odessa Bible Church will serve as the main hub of the Odessa Midland area. Quote, "If you print at home or you print at a college, you will drop it off here," Gray said. "We are going to process it." End quote. In a room dedicated to producing face shields at Odessa Bible Church, Elias Gray checks the progress of a batch of 3D printed face shields Wednesday afternoon. Able to print up to 13 shields a day with one printer, Gray has ordered 6 more 3D printers thanks to donations raised and will be able to produce hundreds of masks a week for hospitals in need. With the funds that he has received personally and through GoFundMe, along with the donated supplies and volunteer hours, Gray has already purchased 6 more 3D printers, an additional printer that will be donated, and he believes he has the materials to make more than 100 face shields per day. Gray explained that he initially began his 3D printing journey focused solely on face shields, but he expects that need to change to ventilator valves. Gray says it takes about 3 times longer to print a ventilator valve than it does to print one face shield. Quote, "I would like to stock up on face shields," Gray said. "We have a spreadsheet of how many face shields each place needs, and the list is growing each day. Once we catch up with that, we are going to take half the printers and start printing ventilators." End quote. After he's finished 3D printing face shields and ventilators, Gray said he will be donating all of the 3D printers he buys to Midland High, Midland Lee, Odessa High School, and Permian High School. He says middle schools or colleges could receive a 3D printer as well, but for now he's going to keep his promise to the Odessa Midland High Schools. Gray said he was able to purchase more 3D printers than what he originally expected. The six 3D printers that are expected this month were purchased between $350 and $425. Gray said 2 years ago he spent $600 on the exact same 3D printer. Quote, "The idea behind this is to benefit multiple organizations," Gray said. "First are the hospitals, second are the patients. After all of this is over, I want to take these printers and donate them to the high schools." End quote. With the help of Odessa Bible Church, Gray said a Facebook group was formed that allows people to keep clean and assemble face shields each night. He said the group at the church cafeteria is limited to 5 people to allow for social distancing. Gray said after the face shields are cleaned and assembled, that those materials will be packed into a box and sit for 4 days. He said the wait time will ensure that if anyone is infected with the coronavirus, that it won't be spread to medical staff at hospitals. Quote, "We're going to be boxing these off and waiting for 4 days," he said. "The virus can live on a surface for 4 days, so even if someone came in and they didn't put their gloves on while they were working or sanitize their hands, we are going to throw face shields in a box and wait 4 days before we give them to an organization. The organization will also use their sterilization. We are going to sterilize on this end, and they are going to sterilize on their end to prevent any possible contraction." This is a guest column written by Carol Cates, who is the chief nursing officer at Odessa Regional Medical Center. The front lines. This is probably going to be among the shortest of the weekly pieces I will ever write for the Odessa American, but it is also one of the most heartfelt. I have said this many times, I am not a native West Texan, but I got here as fast as I could. I thought I could not be more proud of our community and the many health care providers and first responders we have here when we had the shooting incident on Labor Day weekend last year. I was wrong. Every single day I am in awe of the people I work with and interact with as we are dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic. If we have to go through this, I cannot imagine a better place to be. The Permian Basin is the best place on earth. I want to say thank you and recognize the people who are sewing their fingers off to make caps and face masks just in case we run into a shortage, people who are working so hard for others and at the same time hoping their hard work will not be put into use. People who have 3D printers and have figured out how to make face shields, ventilator parts, and all sorts of things that we may need and pray we never do. The many companies and individuals who have donated PPE to the hospitals and first responders because they know the need is great. The restaurants that I know are struggling and still manage to bring food and treats to healthcare workers to say thank you. There are so many people who are doing so many wonderful things for the healthcare providers and the community. I cannot even begin to list them all. Thank you is all I have, but it is so inadequate to express my gratitude. Second, I want to thank my colleagues, the doctors, nurses, allied health professionals, first responders, and all the other folks from housekeeping and dietary to the supply chain folks who keep this system going. Those people on the front lines who put themselves in danger every day for someone else. Those people who are stepping up to save PPE for those who need it most in a myriad of ways. Those who see the news where healthcare providers in hard-hit areas look like they've aged decades and have gotten sick, yet they still come to work every day, prepared to fight the battle if we become one of those hard-hit areas. I want to say thank you to the other hospitals in the community, Medical Center Hospital and Midland Memorial Hospital. We have worked together as a team for years to serve this community, and I have never been more grateful or proud of that bond than I have been over the past few weeks. Finally, I want to thank those of you who are taking the stay-at-home and social distancing and hand-washing guidance seriously. I know it is hard not to see the people you love. It's hard to stay home with little more than Netflix to occupy your time. But know you are making a difference in the world by what you are doing. You are saving lives. Thank you. COVID-19 News by the numbers. Ector County confirmed cases, 26. Ector County negative, 112, out of 197 tested, with 59 pending. Midland County, 22 confirmed cases out of 489 tested, one death. Texas, 6,812 confirmed cases with 70,938 tested. Total Texas deaths, 127. U.S. cases, 335,524 total confirmed, and 9,602 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or cdc.gov. Medical Center Hospital officials ask those who are experiencing symptoms to call 432-640-2747. The line will be answered from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m., Monday through Friday, and from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturday and Sunday. If you are showing symptoms and phone lines are closed, please self-quarantine and call back during phone operating hours. Call 911 for all medical emergencies. Here are some death notices that appeared in the Odessa American on April 6th. Cynthia Grace Garcia, age 51, of Odessa, died Thursday, April 2nd, in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. on Tuesday, April 7th, at St. Joseph's Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery in Rose Hill Section. Father Tony Franco is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Cyrilda Rivera Luera, age 92, of Odessa, died Friday, April 3rd, in Odessa. Chapel service is scheduled for 9 a.m. Tuesday, April 7th, at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Graveside service will follow at Latin America Cemetery in Ballinger, Texas. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.